I'm opening. We have an eye, part of a nostril, two teeth. One of the teeth has a small cavity. Close call, folks, but I think we got here just in time.
Presented by Maria Menounos and Kevin Undergaro. This is Anatomy of a Movie. In-depth discussions and breakdowns of various movie titles. And now that you've seen the movie, let the dissection begin.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, for another installment of Anatomy of a Movie. Today's edition, The Giver. Not the book, but the film. If you want to check out the book, hop on over to bookcircleonline.com, where they will be doing an interview with the author of the book. Very exciting stuff. Today,
awesome.
We'll talk a little bit about the book, but our primary focus is the 2014 film, The Giver. We have John Comerford.
Hello, everybody.
Sarah Stratton.
Hello.
Marissa Serafini, back from hiatus.
Hello, everyone. I'm here.
And Phil Svitek, of course. And we do not have the sounds of Dimitri Panos for this panel. He will be back on The Expendables. He did not get a chance to see The Giver. But over in the booth, we have our continued edition of JTE. Say hi, JTE.
What up?
He gave the thumbs up.
People can't see that.
Anyway, let's start with overall thoughts on the movie.
I'm not starting.
Oh, all right.
Is that an indication of how you felt about the movie? Or?
I always feel like I start. Well, so I don't.
I'm going to go for Sarah. Sarah loved the books.
See, this is why I knew he's going to make me start, and I tried to avoid it.
I was going to go to John. Let's start with you, John.
I have not read the book. I don't know anything about the books or the ones that came after. I only know about this particular movie. I thought it was okay. I enjoyed some of it, and a lot of it I was kind of questioning. It didn't vault off the screen or anything like that, but it was, you know, they had some interesting, thought-provoking ideas, and for that I liked it.
Let's go to Marissa, because clearly I'm getting the death eye from Sarah.
Well, I had read the book when I was younger, so I was a kid the first time.
Do you mind asking how old you were when you read it?
I was in third grade, so
wow,
I was probably
so
around
eight, nine.
Yeah, okay. But surprisingly, watching the film, I remembered a lot of elements from the book, especially reading it at such a young age, and then I just reread the book, so it's fresh in my head. And it's a very, very simple book. I liked it, I remember liking it when I was younger, and rereading it now, I still like it. And it was cool how they portrayed it. The film portrayed a very, very simple book, but visually added to it that a lot of people could understand a little bit better, because the book is mostly just dialogue.
My criticism is going to seem harsher than it actually is, so I apologize for that in advance. To me, I thought the movie did what it needed to. I thought we always kind of talk about this, of some movies are a little bit longer than they need to be. Other movies are at the right pace. This was a little bit too short for what it needed to be. I felt it could have been 2 hours and it wouldn't have felt long. And visually, where Life of Pi, and that's an adaptation of a book, did such an amazing visual job of what it was accomplishing. This, because it hinders so much on visuals, I didn't feel like we got as much as we needed to. Whose phone is that?
Sorry.
You are banished.
I am.
Go fix that phone.
Back on
right
my hiatus.
So you're saying that they could have had more success with a longer adaptation, so they could have delved deeper into it rather than just
correct
being the surface.
And the nice part is because you're using visuals, obviously a picture is worth 1,000 words.
Sure.
There was stuff that could have been conveyed. Mm-hmm. Better, you know, had stronger visuals been in place. And it just needs to be a little bit longer. And to me, no offense, there's a fantastical element to the boundary that I just never fully grasped, even as a child. And this is where
the book and the movie? Because I don't know how it was handled in the book.
The book, it's been a while since I read it, but I always kind of had that inkling of like, well, what does that mean?
The boundary.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which I'm going to go to Sarah.
Okay, so I, as Phil has mentioned, really did enjoy this book as a child. I also read it in elementary school and then reread it in high school. And to Marissa's point, it's a simple book, but it's just like, it's a thought book. Like, you're supposed to, you can read a chapter and then think about how that impacts your life for a couple hours and then you go back. It can be a really quick read. You can do it, but you can also take a lot of time if you really want to, like, I don't know, just explore like that. So I really enjoy it. For the movie, I would say that it is a good movie. I think it was a really big challenge for them to make, and I'm not sure I would have gone the same direction they did. I know that one of the things they did try to spice up was the action, and the action actually pulled me out of the pace. I think that was to make it kind of more of a bringing a younger audience in, keeping it moving. But to me, it made the pacing a little off. I felt like we had some slow chunks, and then it was like spurt of energy, and then slow it down, and then spurt of energy. And I would have been completely satisfied with just kind of slowing down the pace, just making it very much a thought movie, just about how people think, about really in-depth in the memories. But that's how I also read it. So that's how I related to it. Like, the book, I think, Marissa, it's like 180.
It's 190 pages.
It's 190 pages. You can read that in a couple hours. But for me, it's like I can extend that book to reading it over a week, over a couple of days. Not because I need to read that slowly, but I like to read that slow. So for me, the pacing was a little off in this film. Other than that, there was a lot of things I liked as well.
We can kind of get more into this, but John had mentioned it. Suffers from, there's too many other movies, like Divergent, you know, Hunger Games. Yeah. Before that, we had Twilight.
The thing is, this book was written before books were written, but those films came out before this one.
It does suffer by those comparisons.
I feel those films already being released kind of hindered this one.
Yeah, but in my opinion, it didn't need to be as associated with them. I feel like they created more of that association because they added little action moments.
I know.
Because
they had the
drone searching and the solar panel riding and these other things. That, to me, what was like, oh, wait, we need to add something a little more fun, like Hunger Games-ish, or just like a little more high energy. Where this movie, to me, could have taken place almost completely in the Giver's house.
Second half of the book is all in the Giver's location.
Like, we almost, like, to me, we could have stayed in that location. Mm-hmm. It could have just been there. Like, it almost could have been like how a play has one location and just sit and dwelled in there. I think that's maybe a little bit too extreme, and you do want to see the community and you do want to see the ceremony and whatnot. But that is the meat of this story, is just that one-on-one connection. It's just the living and the memories. It's just deconstructing what the right way to think and the right way to feel and the right way to live is. And instead we were bouncing around from location to location. Mm-hmm. We were in the nurturing center. We were in the counselor's chambers. We were in the house. We were all over the place. And this story, to me, is not about where you are. It's about how you think. So,
and how you feel.
So let me ask you, let's compare it. Let's do a book to movie comparison of kind of everything. And, you know, one of the interesting points to note is that Jeff Bridges is also a producer on this movie. Mm-hmm. He in fact pushed for this movie to be made,
for 20 years.
Yeah, a long time.
So about a year after it came out, I guess he was interested and had the rights or whatever.
Yeah.
His dad was supposed to be in it.
Yeah, he was going to have which is a great idea. I mean, I don't know if those of you like Lloyd Bridges. I do. Lloyd Bridges would have been a good Giver.
And was Jeff set to play like the receiver as well? Was that going to
No. He was going to direct it and direct his father being the Giver.
That would have been interesting. Alas, that did not happen. So, I mean, for all it's worth, you know, in terms of comparison, like, what do you think was left out, or what certainly was left out that you felt could have been in there, and vice versa?
Well, we can just talk probably about the changes.
Yeah, let's do
it. Mostly, I'd say it was the opposite. Things that weren't left out, but things that they added. The overall look, I mean, I liked how they gave the visual element of what the community would look like, the sameness, the one, very one-tracked, and how everyone's on the same level and treated the same. There's no anger, there's no, you know, everyone's pretty equal. And I liked how they gave that visual reinforcement so the audience could understand. But it was also kind of gave that futuristic look in a way too, with the holograms that were not in the book, because when you read the book, they're back to that basic pen and paper. It's very tangible items, mm-hmm. rather than the futuristic look of holograms and the Big Brother kind of feel with
the
counselor is looking down in security on everyone. So it's just those kind of elements that they added.
That's
that
not
really,
part of the book? The Big Brother stuff is not part of the book?
No, that's not really part of... I mean, it is, but it's not. They really honed in on that more. They made the community more involved in the film than they did in the book.
Hmm. Well, I think part of that, you guys can speak to this a little bit more, but you needed a more direct threat. An immediate threat. You know, in the book, it's because you're in everyone's thoughts, then yes, the goal is to rectify the society. Mm-hmm. But in a movie, while that's all well and good,
you need
a villain, right? And so if you're not necessarily getting that in a book, that's, I feel like it's a little bit easier to achieve in some respects. With this, you need a visual representation of, okay, there's a ticking time bomb, there's something against you. And that's why they made that choice of with the Big Brother, which obviously led to her being able to appear anywhere and mm-hmm. being able to communicate, except the only place she wasn't allowed to go into was the giver.
Well, that makes sense. I mean, she's the antagonist, and she represents all the thinking of the time, mm-hmm. which was oppressive and everywhere and omnipresent and all that kind of stuff. So that would make sense that she could appear anywhere.
And that character was made a lot larger than in the books. Okay. Meryl Streep's character of
the chief elder
is much smaller in the books. There isn't this...
She only appeared in one scene at the opening ceremony.
But let me ask them, but is that... obviously, the mentality is throughout the community, right? They're all having that same thought about sameness and uniformity and...
In the book, a lot of...
Supposed egalitarianism.
In the book, everyone questions things, but they don't really go beyond that. Uh-huh. None of them take the initiative to find out answers like Jonas does.
Mm-hmm. There's more also with his parents or his... parental figures, if my memory serves correctly.
Yes, his dwelling.
they touch upon Jonas's family a lot more than they did in the film.
In the film, it's we don't get to see as much of that. Instead, some of their interactions are kind of imposed on the chief elder's interactions. Mm-hmm. And I think that actually that was a really good choice. I think that raising her stakes, and that did give a voice to the community and a level of authority, and especially because it added an interesting... relationship between her and the giver. Mm-hmm, and I liked their scene, so I'm just glad it was in there. Mm-hmm. So I think that was a good choice and a good direction that kind of increased her level.
Mm-hmm. Let me add one of the things that because he's receiving these memories, we never get a full conclusion of like, okay, is humanity going to be able to handle all this thought? You know, yes, people can be good, but clearly his, the receiver of the memories, it's, we barely touch upon the bad stuff. We see a war, we see a shooting of an elephant, but it's like we never go the full depth of how extreme humanity can be, and then making the choice that despite all those negativities, that these people can go beyond that, and they can actually, we can...
That's because we didn't have enough time there. Spend enough time going through it and really just sitting in all those scenes were cut so short.
But that's what the book also explains a bit better, because we know that Jonas has been going through his training for a year. He's receiving all these memories before, and the previous receiver, Rosemary, she only had 2 months worth of training. Actually, in the book, it was 5 weeks of training. Mm-hmm. And she actually... left and went into the elsewhere, and her memories were returned to the community. The community got all those memories back just from
the community got them, or they went.
They were returned to the community. They,
so people in the community,
everyone remembered everything.
They remembered all her memories that she got
just in the 5 weeks. So knowing that Jonas has gotten to the level where he has a year's worth of memories, so if anything happened to him, the memories got back to the community, I think that's where they added the more security. This is how dire it can be was returned.
I think that would have been, I don't know why you would leave that out, that would tell me how much the community, what's at stake there. If I had known that Rosemary leaving and going into the elsewhere, whatever the heck that is.
The boundary.
Boundary. Whatever it is. That the community, how they were affected by that 10 years ago. I didn't get for a second that they had been affected by Rosemary's leaving. I thought, It was a blip. It wasn't even a blip on the radar.
Yeah, so that happened, and the community couldn't help it. and when Rosemary went to the Elsewhere, so knowing that that could happen again, they wanted to contain Jonas.
Aware of those stakes
at all. The problem for me is that it's, you know, the in the film it's set up as sci-fi, but then you have this fantastic element.
Yeah.
And the fantastic part of it isn't really fully explained, and it's one of those things, okay, the memories can seep back into the human beings, but what about the thoughts on what to do with it? And that's why the giver is ultimately going to stay behind to teach them
what to do with all these emotions.
And the wisdom.
Yes.
To and guide memories. Them.
But it's just... The wisdom. One of the fascinating things for me about both the book and the movie is the fact of, okay, you know, I'm trying to... I'm trying my best to, and this is a knock on it at all, but I'm trying my best to suspend my disbelief in terms of what would it be like for me not to have ever seen color? What would it be like for me to never feel emotion? Mm-hmm. And that to me is very interesting. And then, okay, all of a sudden that surge is inserted into me and like, how do I process this? Mm-hmm. And I find that very interesting. And it's one of those things that how do you tell someone?
How do you put that on film?
Yeah,
because for me that was a big challenge for this because I didn't quite and the same thing goes true with how does the giver give these things? I mean, how do you visually represent that on film? Because I didn't ever see really how is it Jonas or Jason?
Jonas
was really affected by it emotionally. I mean, I got it when he was with Gabriel, the baby, and everything, but I didn't really see him go through that when he saw that war and stuff because we were all in there. And when we came out,
it was five seconds. Like, what? It was 5 seconds. Exactly. We did not get to see what I wanted. I wanted an arc of thought.
Yeah, exactly.
Like how you go through stages of grief. Mm-hmm. I wanted something. To see that. And I wanted to sit with him.
Phil's first point, which is I think that's where they could have taken a lot more time with that because I was fascinated by that, but then I didn't get, I saw it was only scratched the surface of it. We got the immediate reaction.
And that's not the,
I do appreciate that the black and white stuff early on, I'm glad they didn't spend as much time on it. I thought that worked really well. Because in the book, it's one of those, it's like almost like a sixth sense to me. Sixth sense, right? When that hits, like, oh, I see dead people, blah, blah. It's, look how clever as a filmmaker I was.
Right.
And in the book, right, there's no visuals. You have to put the visuals in your mind as you're reading the words. And obviously that the fact of color can be withheld from you quite easily. Mm-hmm. In a movie, not so much. So understanding that principle to be able to like, okay, we have to get through this color aspect. Right. Let's just get through it as quickly as we can. I thought that worked well.
Yeah, but I liked how they went from the black and white and the importance of color because even in film in general, colors is used for symbolism. Red is anger or love. So like all these different emotions and meanings for colors, I loved how they really did portray that. I wish they would have touched upon it a little bit more. Mm. I mean, I remembered from the book, like the red apples and the red hair and the sunburn and sled and stuff like that. But I honestly forgot the fact that all the colors came back and when Jonas was going through the memories. But it would have been at the end, I would have liked how they would have touched upon if everyone felt happy again because it was bright and colorful at the end.
See, but I liked how it was kind of a scale of color. I liked how it didn't go from black and white to the very bright green, blue, and that we got at the end. I liked how there was a transition period, how we kind of went into like almost what was it like the sepia tones and like the different the memories had different colors. They were all like put through different filters, and I liked there was kind of like this. I don't know. It was a changing visual experience depending on whether we're in the memory and the community and
through his eyes, things were different, changing.
Yeah, exactly. So I like that it wasn't just like black and white, beautiful, bright color. I like that there was like this kind of
But I have to say that when I first saw that sunset when he's on in that memory, that was a great visual because
it's a great shot.
I just wanted to hang there for a while. Yeah, let's just hang onto the boat. Yeah.
You know, I like that because there is actually a section in the book where after he had the memory and he was seeing the red color, he was questioning, what is this thing? Yeah. You know, I'm seeing a different shade. And then he was like, that was the color red. Eventually you'll get all the colors back. And then the next memory he gave him was a memory of a rainbow. Mm-hmm. So then there was the section where he was going over like all the colors. Mm-hmm. So, but that wasn't in the book. They went straight to the boat and the sunset, which was, I mean, I didn't mind that they changed that.
Yeah, I thought it was a beautiful visual representation. Mm-hmm. I thought it was better than a rainbow. Because I think rainbow's a little more expected. Like this, we did read this
book.
Yeah,
we know what a rainbow is.
Yeah. And it's something that kind of you can come to mind and you're like, oh, it's a rainbow. A sunset, sometimes you just like that was breathtaking.
Yeah.
Like, as much as I can imagine sunset, it's really hard to even recreate that image in my mind without seeing it. So I thought that was beautiful. When they spoke about the words, I think that it's just about taking time, like finding the word red. Because
finding the word red.
So the memories are supposed to translate words well, and that's where you gain vocabulary. But it's almost like a searching. Like it wasn't as immediate. So like it wasn't
memory
like,
was evocative that would create language out of it.
I think what the film does really well is because the book talks about so much about memories and feelings, things that are intangible, intangible. And then the film gives the visual aspects for us to understand these intangible things that they're feeling. Mm-hmm. So warmth, and when they're explaining the word love, they talk about the description, the warm feelings, and you feel happy, but they can't explain it. So the film does a great job of visually representing. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I thought the scene in that waterfall triangular
area
thing.
Yes, I thought that was actually a really beautiful scene because of how he was trying to communicate, and it was one of those things, you know, where he is trying to explain what love and emotion is like. Mm-hmm. Does it feel warm? Does it feel nice? Mm-hmm. Like, you don't have to understand what you're feeling right now, but like this is the nugget.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that worked really
well.
Was
that waterfall thing in the
book? No, the waterfall.
I did not remember it. I remember trying to find it. Also, their love relationship didn't go as far in the book.
There wasn't.
They're also a lot younger.
They were 12.
Yeah. There wasn't a relationship really. There was a dream that Jonas had that with his friend.
Asher?
Asher, Fiona.
Fiona.
Like, he dreamt that he had this really budding relationship with his friend, but it didn't go any more farther than that.
So let's talk about that, the fact that they upped their age. I mean, they were 12 in the book.
I'm all for upping the ages in movies. Unless we're doing, like, Diary of a Wimpy Kid or, like, whatever, the kid who ate worms
Little
or whatever
Rascals.
That's called. Like, that's fine. Like, those are supposed to set the age. When it is kind of just Topian, I'm fine with them upping it. I understand it's easier. I understand even for just like legal matters of filming, getting. Like,
I mean, here's the
thing.
I get it,
and it doesn't bother me.
You have to. You're putting a lot on these kids to be able to deliver this movie. And like, you know, I mentioned The Little Rascals. Unlike The Little Rascals, where it can be comedic and funny, you have to put a lot on these actors.
Mm-hmm.
And to have, let's say, a 12-year-old kid really carry a movie. And it's not just the one kid, right? It's not just Jonas. It also has to be her, and it also has to be Asher. And I think it's a lot to put on a 12-year-old.
But if you think about it, also just humanity in general, that's when kids are starting to really question the world and have comprehension of what's going on. So it makes sense that all the characters in the books are 12. But for the film visually, I did have a hard time believing, like, these kids are pretty much older. They're, like, older teenagers not understanding, which was hard for me to understand. I'm like, I don't believe that they don't understand this, because people at that age should know already.
Mm-hmm. Should even know.
Well, the
rest of the community doesn't know either. So
that's
like,
the thing, but they don't understand because they're medicated. They're medicated robots.
I mean, the whole thing with the father, you know, released elsewhere. Like, he just doesn't understand. So I don't mind that aspect of it at all.
Yeah.
Let's talk casting. I want to start with Asher only because he's a personal friend, Cameron Monaghan. I thought he did a good job.
Yeah.
By the way,
his character was really changed.
He just turned 21 a couple days ago.
Awesome. Oh. I think his character was, to me, really changed. They made him how would you describe it? It seemed like they almost put in like a little bit of a could be evil streak.
Yeah. They gave him a bigger role in the film because when they were getting their new positions in the world, Asher got the position of assistant director of a recreation center.
He was supposed to teach the kids the
They
games.
Really elevated his position to make him a more cooler
position.
And also so they gave him the plot device of being able to be the one to trust him and drop him in the river. Like, that's pretty much the reason behind that.
I think it's that, and he's also able to just be able to infiltrate the front, right? They're such close friends, and you know, in this, it's that divide, and she's the in between. She can go one way or the other, but obviously she goes with Jonas more.
I think he did a great job. I think that they just changed that character a whole bunch. between, like, I felt like there was a lot of, like, looks of, like, jealousy and of uncertainty and of him standing on that border of which choice he's going to decide. And that I didn't really get those feelings from him from the book. So they did add more, just like they added more to the Chief Elder. And I thought he did a good job with it.
I think he did a
great I don't know if I needed job. The drones, though.
It's, I think he did a great job of portraying a person who wouldn't understand if they got their memories back. He would be a person who wouldn't be able to handle that. And he played a nice foil towards Jonas being the one who wants the memories and everyone has to feel and should feel, compared to him being like, no,
I can't.
We're
going to
keep this uniformity. This is the way life should be.
I thought he did a fine job. The thing I had difficulties with, they said that he was the one that makes everybody laugh in the beginning. And then he was so serious. So serious. And they didn't really show the turn or why and how he was so easily welcomed.
It was
that
thrown away line of, oh, look who grew up.
Exactly.
Grew up.
And again, he's not your lead, so you don't have to do too much. But it was kind of, it felt a little unfulfilled because it was a little too perfunctory. They needed that to serve a plot point so that he could go chasing with the drones and do all that kind of stuff, but it didn't really
seem. I felt like overall it was actually cast very well, and that I thought that I really liked a lot of their performances. I thought that Brenton did a really good job of kind of doing that look of wonder.
Let's go one down.
But I want to say an overall comment.
Go ahead, Sarah.
She wants to dance.
Yeah. Let me finish, Phil.
Go ahead.
No, but I thought they all did a good job. I just felt like, in general, they weren't each... They had such good actors, and they weren't all given room to grow or really fulfill their character. And I kind of... For a lot of the characters, I felt like it was a waste of talent. Where I wanted to connect with so many of them. I wanted to connect with Katie Holmes. I wanted to connect with Alexander Skarsgård. I wanted to see more of them because I know what they could do. And I just felt like I didn't get enough time with each of them. And that was in general for almost everyone except for Brenton, who's the only one and it was out of his perspective, but he was the only one who I felt like we got time with. And I could even have used more time.
Yeah.
So.
I would agree. I mean, Taylor Swift, let's talk about her as Rosemary, because Rosemary she's the idea of her is really important, but what she...
That's all we got of her was the idea.
Yeah, we didn't quite get her too much. And one of the reasons why I do want to mention it is because, they pinned her down to be able to draw in the younger crowd, right? Mm-hmm. And I think a big flaw with the movie was that they released all of her clips online, so then all the fans of Taylor Swift, they already seen her, so they don't even get to go see the movie. I think that was a big flaw in the marketing. Mm-hmm. But again, it's the idea of her is great, but she didn't...
She also just wasn't... Oh my God, I'm sorry, but I just think it's a joke that people are even marketing this as Taylor Swift being in the movie. Okay. Because it was not... Like, Rosemary is important. Taylor Swift being in the movie is not important.
No.
She's in it for 3 seconds.
Literally.
Like... It's the
half of
Rosemary
is
important. Taylor Swift is not important to The Giver. I don't understand. Like, you have so many people in this. Like, oh, let's add a pop star.
No, honestly, it took me out of it because I didn't know Taylor Swift was in this film. Mm-hmm. And then when I saw her in a brunette hair, it took me out of it and got me distracted.
I didn't recognize her.
Yeah, I didn't recognize it. It distracted me for such a emotional scene with The Giver. And these are the memories that he wants to recreate himself, and just, watching his daughter over and over again. But then taking me out, knowing that, oh, that's Taylor Swift. What is she doing here for such a serious scene? That was probably my least favorite part of the movie, even though it could have been probably one of my favorite part of the movie.
And it's not that she did a bad job. It just was unnecessary, and it was distracting, and it became a focus of the film that Taylor Swift was in it. Instead of what it was, which was that he lost his daughter.
He lost his daughter. Yeah.
And it was bad.
And the feeling of music.
I didn't recognize or didn't know she was in it because of my self-imposed media blackout. But so I didn't know. But it didn't really matter to me who the actress was because, much to Phil's point, there was no connection made, and much to Sarah's point as well, they didn't spend enough time there to really build up, oh my God, this is the daughter. Because once I learned that she was the daughter and she died, it was like, oh, that's tragic. Intellectually, I got that, but there was no way you felt that, because they just didn't really mind, much to the degree they did with all the relationships and all the characters. They really didn't mind them for the depth that you wanted.
This
was the moment, right? You have two people in this entire community world, mm-hmm. whatever you want to call it, that are able to feel these things. And right, one of the things that didn't quite show through was the idea of isolation and frustration, mm-hmm. of, wow, I have all this knowledge and no one believes me.
And I can't share it with anybody.
The girl...
They wouldn't get it.
Yeah, the girl, you know, they kind of used her, and she was able to... kind of, she wasn't understanding, but I felt she was more understanding than she could have been. And it was a time where they could have had the giver and the receiver just mm-hmm. really go and be like, mm-hmm. you know, how sad this is, or like, let's pour out our emotions, yeah. and we're the only ones that can actually understand what the hell's going on.
Because the burden that they carry, that they're the only ones that could possibly understand.
Yeah.
And they have to keep it all in context in order to help people make wise decisions. I mean, that sense of isolation. Yeah, he's isolated. So visually, we got that nice separation from mm-hmm. the community. He has to live apart and all that stuff. But I never really sensed that that's what was happening to Jonas.
And I thought we could have had a moment where we helped the community. You know what I mean? Like, when they were called upon to do something based on their knowledge, we didn't get yeah. an execution of that.
Give them perspective.
Mm-hmm. And partly, I think it's because, to me, the giver and the receiver almost feel like just a throwaway job that, yes, it seems important, but, like, nobody actually respects it. It's like, what do they yeah. do? Nobody knows what the hell they
nice outfit. But it's weird, because at the same time, they do respect it, because, like, they do have all these rules around it that they continue to follow, mm-hmm. but they're... being that we don't get to see them in use, it does do that. Like, yeah. why are they here?
And but also, okay, I'm just going to ask a question. Did you feel like the giver and the chief elder, you know, Meryl Streep's character, seemed like they had
a past relationship? And used to be married, and it was, and like, their daughter? Like,
yes. Parents to Rosemary? Okay, hopefully I wasn't the only one who felt that, because that did not happen in the book.
Yeah, I felt it too.
I mean,
it was strange.
I didn't mind it. I thought yeah. that would have added so many more character layers to the chief yeah. elders.
Well, I went there with it.
And the reason why they still had the position of receiver and giver, because those important memories still have to, of her mm-hmm. potential daughter, you know, if they were married and mm-hmm. had, you know, Rosemary, like, the importance of having that memory.
Mm-hmm.
Sarah, as soon as you were talking about Meryl and Bridges, and you just said the receiver and the giver, just dirty thoughts.
Mine out of the gutter.
Way to go.
I just look at Phil, and he's just, like, smirking, and I'm like, I almost
cracked up.
Well, here's the thing. I also thought that they had a relationship, which I thought was fascinating, and it could have been her daughter. But, again, I was going, well, oh, that's really interesting. But then it didn't go anywhere, and I went, well, why introduce it? Or have us go think that, but have it be something even more interesting later, and they didn't do anything with it.
They didn't do anything with it, but it was a really good scene.
Oh, absolutely.
So it's like hard, because you're like, but I didn't want them to cut it, mm-hmm. because I really liked the scene.
It was the only thing that really gave context and depth.
Yeah.
Because, like, finally, we get something that isn't certain. I mean, that's the thing, the whole metaphor about this seemingly utopian egalitarian society and stuff, and underneath there's just a mess. And I'm going, but the whole movie felt like it stayed on that surface level. It didn't really go deep enough, at least not as deep enough as I mm-hmm. wanted it to go in any of the relationships or development.
How do you think, I want to get you guys this.
Maybe it should have had a mini series.
Maybe.
In a 190-page book? Yeah, sure.
But how do you think Jeff played the receiver? Jeff Bridges, only because we get introduced to him and he's almost like angry yeah. and bitter.
But yeah, and I love that. And well, I mean, love that he's
angry. It's just because of Rosemary. Like,
no,
what,
no,
why?
No, 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 no.
I think it's
he
that.
Has to lie to everyone.
He literally has the burden of all these memories mm-hmm. and all these emotions and feelings, and no one else understands it.
And he can't share them with anybody, so he has to shoulder the burden itself.
But then he's still. I still feel like later on through the relationship, he kind of opens up, but he's still a little bit like, here we go, we gotta go.
Well, I thought he has another person that he can connect to and understands him and everything he's going. And also, I feel what they explained more in the book is that every time he transferred a memory to Jonas, he lost that memory. Jonas is now the one
what?
Who only
yeah.
has it.
What?
I so, wanted to tell you that,
yes,
but I didn't know how to
oh
like,
my God.
And,
now I'm angry. Now I'm angry.
Now yes. you're angry?
I'm angry. I was going to say pissed.
There's so much more.
I'm angry because this could have been so much
so
more
every,
interesting to
so
see
every,
him
every happy
losing.
Memory he would
yes.
give away. He would lose a happy because, memory.
And if you lose your memories, what becomes of you? Because you start to lose who you are because you have no context
well,
anymore.
He like there was one where he gave away a memory of snow, but he's like, I have 1,000 memories of snow.
Mm-hmm.
But like,
right.
But think about it, if you're giving away all your happy
yeah,
memories
I
first,
mean,
then you're just more.
And then you could really see some
the
arc there. You mm-hmm. could because you know when he says that he loves him and stuff like that, I was like, okay, he has to say that for the movie. But I didn't really see that happen. I didn't really see their relationship develop into something that some sort of familial love. I was kind of like, oh, here's what we have
you
to
do. You
should
read the book.
You definitely so. Should.
Is that what is coming out of this?
What? No, for a story that delves so much on feelings and memories mm-hmm. and intangible things that's hard to explain, that's what the book does pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
But there's you always question whether or not, okay, can this book be adapted and things like that? Mm-hmm. And then movies like Life of Pi come out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that just did such an amazing job.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, that I believe that it is possible. It just takes a lot more effort.
Yes. And you have to, I think, be willing to take bigger risks. For me, the risk they didn't take in this was they didn't want to think that anyone could just sit there and be patient
yeah,
and just think.
Yeah, and I don't know if this is true, but it feels like they didn't trust the material enough to really go into the into the depths that you would
that
need in order to convey those thoughts, mm-hmm. feelings, and all those
like
behaviors.
Yeah, they just were like, okay, we have to keep people
yeah, keep
pumped
it moving,
up.
Keep it
we have to keep up. Like, this is a movie we should have just. I wanted my breath to be lost and be taken mm-hmm. away in the memories and to be feeling the emotions with him instead of like. I don't know.
Because just the idea, I mean, I love the way they set it up. You're going to the giver, you're going into the new world in terms of story mm-hmm. arc, story structure. You know, the second act is the new world opening up to a whole new thing. Even mm-hmm. though his eyes are closing, he's actually opening up to a whole new world. And the visual of that window overlooking the boundless, limitless of whatever, because there's a boundary there, but it's beyond that. And so there's the whole thing is laid out in front of him and stuff. There's all kinds of wonderful visuals, and yet we're in the room and it should be there's all this wealth of knowledge in there, and yet I didn't really see much of that transfer of information or of feeling. I mean, yes, they held hands and we got to see some great imagery, but I didn't really see, well, first of all, I didn't see anything happening to Jeff, which is unfortunate because it would have been great to see the giver start to lessen.
Mm-hmm.
Or lose part of himself. That would have been fascinating.
I mean, it's just one of those things where these actors, they have so much more to actually give. You know, they have a talent beyond what
they
was perhaps shown.
That's what I said. I told you that.
I
my
said
overall
it
content.
said it
but that's also how...
Phil, I'm so glad you're on that side of the table today.
But so that's also, if you think about that's also how the book ended. Not to jump too far ahead, but when Jonas mm-hmm. is sledding down the hill
the
and
house.
He hears all the singing and the music in the house, and it's understood that he passed that boundary and mm-hmm. the memories probably went back to the community, but the book ended there.
Mm-hmm.
So we, even in the book, we didn't get the whole community's reaction to receiving
mm-hmm.
the memories.
Feels like that, those mm-hmm. reaction shots.
Mm-hmm.
But it would have been nice. I mean, that's also what the film could have added to it.
Mm-hmm.
They had enough time to.
They did. Again, if this movie... I'd be interested to know which scenes got cut because I really felt like this movie could have been 2 hours and I don't think many people would have been mad. Speaking of the visuals, I do want to say that kudos to South Africa because it was shot in Johannesburg
yeah.
and Cape Town and
yeah.
portions in England. But, you know, the fact that a town like that is real... You know, it looked great. And that, it just, I love visual. They could have gone so much more. So much more.
I will give it the visual montages of all the photos and even small video clips here and there of people being happy and those memories that these are real things we know because we live in the real world. Mm-hmm. This does happen on an every single day basis. And then
what's missing from that is they're great visuals, but Jonas, who's receiving this, has no idea. He has no context of a guy standing in front of a tank. He doesn't know what a tank is. He doesn't know what that means. He doesn't know who Nelson Mandela is.
He starts to
is.
Understand.
But he understands.
The memory.
Yes, I understand that. But we didn't get to see that in the movie. Yeah. You know that because of the book.
Yeah.
But we didn't really get to see him come to those kinds of understandings.
And this definitely would have added to the budget. Part of the reason why I think it wasn't chosen is because it wasn't generic enough, but like really historical moments. Like the tank thing, obviously because it costs money, you have to get the archival rights for this. But, had they shown and they had the Berlin Wall, so they did have moments of history that I think anyone, young or old, could actually understand what the hell it is. But perhaps more like that would have been really interesting to see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know? That's it. That's it. I would be curious to know the budget on the archival material. You know, and how much was spent on it versus not spent.
The budget for this was $25 million.
Yes, which
is not that high.
It doesn't seem high at all.
It's really not that high, being that they were relying on like creating.
I mean, Taylor Swift, Katie Holmes, you got Jeff Bridges,
you got Meryl Streep.
You know, and what surprises to me, we've talked about whether or not. There's a movie's made because there's love behind it, or a movie's made just because, okay, it's going to do commercially well, and it just has to be made. Mm-hmm. And it feels like a lot of people were behind this movie and wanted it to be made, and there was a lot of love for it. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. It just surprisingly doesn't always show for me, which I'm baffled by.
I agree with you. Like, this, Jeff's been trying to make this movie for 20 years,
yeah.
That's a really long time, and I do feel like maybe there was more studio input. Maybe
That's what I think, because I think the reason why they wanted to do it was the exact reasons why you guys were talking about it, because you guys read the book and what it did for you and how it evoked such response and thought and all that stuff. And I think a lot of people went, yeah, this would be great as a movie. And who knows, maybe they had shot everything that we're hoping. And in the edit room, somebody said, yeah, I don't know that that's going to play well, or who knows, maybe they didn't capture what they thought they captured. But if they did, they certainly didn't trust it enough to put it on the screen, because we didn't get to see it.
And I think a movie like this, you know, it's an interesting time. I wonder how it would have been if it was a Kickstarter.
Okay. I wonder how it would have been if it was done just like on a really, really, really small scale. Like, just not relying on like the big stuff or even the community, but it was just really simple, basically in the giver's room, which is you need a library. Well,
that would have been. I think I agree with you that if you had gone counter programming to Hunger Games or Divergent, and have it less, have it be more about
very
that would
because
have been
you were never going to get to that level. Like even them going down that they were on trays, right. Scene. Mm-hmm. Okay, maybe you can compare it to the zip line in Divergent, but like you never had enough of those set pieces to begin with to match any of those
and
movies.
It wasn't anywhere near important in the first act, so how could it be in the second act? So where, as opposed to Divergent, there was a whole thing about her wanting to be.
And I think that's where those films really hindered those futuristic films hindered The Giver, because this, as I'm going to say again, this story is so much older than those films are. Mm-hmm. But studios seeing that, hey, futuristic dystopian looks is the new rage now that works, that makes money. And then I feel that's the element that they added to this film if they wanted to make money.
So you're suggesting the studios put that in because they wanted to commercialize it as opposed to stick with the original source material.
Yes.
And the reason why the people who wanted to do it for love really wanted to do it.
Supposedly there's like a home video version of this, though.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You read about that?
Yeah, yeah. I did.
Jeff
Bridges supposedly has like a home video version of this.
Where his dad was the giver.
And where they like at home filmed the whole book.
Yeah. And he says it's, you know.
And it's
somewhere. Is it going to be special features?
I don't know, but no. I really want to see it. I feel like it would be amazing.
Yeah,
it would
probably be more interesting. And those things that, because
there's a humanity to it, and you can enjoy it.
It's more authentic.
Despite how bad it may be, it's like our home video-y, there's a connection.
I want to see it so bad.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting.
Release that on YouTube.
I will.
Like
I will.
Taylor Swift scenes.
Yes, I will pay a $15 ticket to see this movie.
I never understood the significance of Gabriel. And John's a church man.
What do you mean you didn't understand the significance?
Only because
he had the mark. He had the potential to see beyond, and he was that.
Gabriel had the potential to see beyond because he had the birthmark.
Yes.
That's it.
Even though that was an element, not
that
in
was
mark.
It was yeah. The birthmark is not in the book. It's the pale eyes, but they like got rid of that, and it was this birthmark thing, right. And
which didn't.
Birth
make
versus
any
nature,
sense.
What is it? So we're selected and we're,
yeah, exactly.
Who knows?
He was asking me what does Gabriel represent in terms of metaphor? Is it the innocence? Is it endless
the
potential?
Value of life and
or someone who literally has a clean start, a fresh slate to build new memories, and that's what Jonas was doing for Gabriel. He was giving him
what the new world could be.
I also think it's the
memories
idea
as a normal person
when you have a newborn. I mean, the whole idea of the sameness and the elders choosing for you your life plan. Here you have a child, and you know its life is decided for it.
I think Gabriel's really significant, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. That's why I was asking, going into it.
But so there's that too. I mean, that's what because I was just wondering what they were. You know what they wanted to use it for, and for me it was something. There was a lot about that in it for me. It's like I don't because this life that was imposed upon Jonas, and obviously not only was it, you know, Gabriel's life was even going to be taken away from him, but the idea that life was being dictated to him and what he was supposed to be, and because that's so limiting. And the whole thing about the sameness is it just makes.
Well, part of the problem for me, Jonas is inserting into these memories, so Gabriel does not have the chance, not that he could either way, but he does not have a chance to experience these things for the first time for himself. Like, as soon as he's 10, he's going to have 8,000 memories of what the hell love is, and, you know, beyond that, he'll
see. Do you think this
more.
Is like, it's like the same thing as television.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I mean, isn't it? Like.
Yeah, but I would argue that you choose to see what you know. I mean, we can get into Marshall McLuhan and the medium is the message and all that.
I just feel like as a kid, though, I felt like there were so many things I learned about before I actually saw them. Like, you were always watching.
You actually experienced them. You saw them on TV before.
But you made the choice to see it, or at the very least, you inadvertently saw it versus, like,
somebody giving it to you.
Like, I would hope that someone didn't tie you up in a room and was like, okay, here's images you're going to watch. Like, please tell me.
I'm sure
your
parents are going to sit down.
But you know what I'm saying? It's like, no, Gabriel didn't have a choice, but, like, I feel like that's more similar to, like, how we're raised, where we do see images and read books.
Far before
I think that was the representation of what happy memories can do. Because everyone's so worried about, if you have all these memories, everyone chooses anger and the pain and choose the wrong set and the wrong choices. But this is the power of good memories, the happy memories. It can help, you know, humanity. Mm-hmm. So I think that was the potential of Gabriel.
And it's also like, I don't know, like the sharing and like them creating connection through memories and through communication and through feeling.
Or you can take it as the far right is saying, is that Gabriel represents that this is a pro-life movie.
Oh, yes. There's a lot of criticism of Gabriel.
I was surprised it is in the book, but I was surprised they really did show that in the film, too.
The whole
inserting the needle in the baby.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought they were probably going to cut away to Jonas and just leave it up to the audience's imagination, but they actually showed it.
Mm-hmm. They cut away at the right time. They really did, because they, you know, talking about a movie that towed the line, that was one of the more darker things. And he does have that line where he says, you know, sorry, your veins aren't big enough for me to do that. That's why I have to do this. Uh-huh. But that was pretty brutal.
It's in the book.
Yeah.
They really did keep that pretty true to the original content.
Wow. That was disturbing, I have to say. I was like, he's not going to... Oh, my God, he is. Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
But that's the moment that that sets Jonas off, and he's like, okay, I have to, you know, get away.
Mm-hmm.
And people have to understand
that. It was effective. It worked.
Yeah.
Fun fact, they had 3 different Gabriels in the movie. I did not know that. They had a 3-month-old, a 6-month-old, and a year-old.
Okay.
Well, the story does take place over 1 year, so that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I didn't... Visually, I didn't know that.
No, I mean,
Phil didn't catch on.
Well, seriously, the movie looked like it happened over 2 weeks.
Yeah, but there was also that quick scene when they're going through all the security footage. They're like, show me all the footage in the past year.
Yeah.
So. But that could have been like, show me all the footage because I want to know his history before this. Yeah, and where they were showing
him growing up.
I don't think people caught that unless you read the book.
Yeah.
And I caught that watching the film. No. I'm like, okay, it was in the past year.
No, but you caught the... Oh, because you've crossed.
Yeah, before. But what I didn't get was it could have been this. What we had seen of Jonas's life could have been 2 weeks, but they got footage for last year. I didn't know that it was.
Yeah, because I want to know when this initially started happening.
The year it's supposed to imply that he's in training for a year, and it got lost in translation.
Yeah, and that a little bit of context there would have helped because if I had known that he'd been learning from the Giver for a year, that would have been a much different thing. It really felt like it was 2 weeks. It was like, oh, okay, it's interesting.
And the reason why it felt less, I have to call out this scene, the map scene. Mm-hmm. When the map falls out of the book, it just seemed so forced, and so many connections were made right then and there. That's why things moved at such a rapid pace that I didn't get the idea that we've been doing this for a year. It just literally seemed like we're rapid fire.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then
it seems so arbitrary that the map and there's a boundary.
Oh, there's a map and let's go on an adventure.
Yeah. And it's like, what? So you, and they made all these connections off the map if you go beyond this boundary, all the memories come. It's like, what? All these memories come back to the community. How does that happen?
Yep, more visual elements that they added to help understand everything.
Yeah,
because that was not in the book.
But it's one of those things, like, you needed clues interspersed throughout, and then finally had we gone to the map, and it's like, the chief elder mentioned something about a boundary and never going beyond it. Why? Mm-hmm. Oh, wait. I remember in fifth grade something about this and like just tying things together.
You could have done that. Yeah, absolutely. It would have been much more interesting to piece that out because then that would have been engaging and for us to follow that.
This was the world's best epiphany.
How did you guys feel about the end? Because for me, like reading the book, I felt like I understood it more, but I remember walking out and being like, if I hadn't read this book, I think I would have gone out being like, what just happened?
So then,
and not in a good way, like in a weird way, like a what?
I think I want to go to John for this because he's a author himself of scripts. But no, I have this question. I think it's an inherent problem with dystopian or utopian fiction where it's like, okay, how the hell do you end it?
Right.
Okay, well, you've got to end on hope. Okay, well, what's hope? Hope is the most ambiguous ending. And it's just that equivalent of a ball rolling out of bounds. It's just like, how in the heck do you end this that's in a satisfying way? And you want to have that surge of emotion, like, everything's going to be okay. Or everything's just doomed. Whatever the case may be. And to create a really, really good ending for something like that is incredibly tough. But how do you solve that?
Because you mentioned the word hope, because the one I think of the most that had a really satisfying ending, it was all about hope, Shawshank Redemption. I mean, that's what he says. I hope, I hope, I hope. It's the end of the movie. It's extremely satisfying. Of course, it's a completely different movie.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say it's a dystopian.
It is in the second act for Andy Dufresne, for sure. I don't think that's very utopian at all, being a Shawshank. So it's very dystopian in a sense. But it's a totally different genre, of course.
I think that... Yeah, I don't know. Because for me, it kind of reads as...
The ambiguity of it is very similar to how it opens with the grayness of everything. Mm-hmm. Because it's even though it's seemingly wonderful because everything's taken care of and nobody's in pain and all that other stuff. So the ambiguity of the ending is kind of... It doesn't leave you much. And a lot of people can interpret it that in many different ways. Obviously, that's what's
I liked it. Sorry. I liked it how, because we know there's this community that's going on. It's a very controlled environment. Mm-hmm. Everything's fake, pretty much. And then the ending left like, okay, he really is, there is a real world out there. There are real people. And he's now crossed that line and he's like, okay, now I can create real memories.
Well, I didn't know that
part of it's fine, but I would argue that Noah, I don't know why people don't give it the credit that it deserves, but to me Noah actually is a nice ending in terms of all this, because I'm not going to spoil anything because I think people know Noah's arc, so I won't get the specifics of the movie full say, but you know, where it's just kind of Noah and the family surviving,
right?
And, you know, in the movie that had gone through a lot, and now there's this sense of hope. Mm-hmm. And how that movie delivers that sense of hope is in such a unique way that it feels great. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a really tough thing to capture. I'm not knocking... I see it's just a really tough thing for dystopian genres.
I didn't really... There's hope. It just didn't... It wasn't extremely hopeful. I mean,
I don't know how these people are going to handle the memories.
That's my point.
All I needed was I needed to see him go through, mm-hmm. and then I don't think I needed to see him again. I think I could have just lived with the memories. I didn't need to see the walking to the house up to that, but that's just me. Because also the walking up to the house thing creates this other sub thing of like,
where are we? Yeah,
like, where are we? Like, how did he already have this memory? If it's happening now,
was it a part of this
family?
Is he dead?
My question is how did the giver even have that memory?
If it was. See, that's where I get confused, memory? Which is why I don't like it. Mm-hmm. So I just need to see him pass the boundary in a way, like, I don't know. I don't even need to see him pass the boundary. He can, like, fade into the fog. Mm-hmm. And then I wanted to see everyone get affected by the memories. Because other than that, I got, a little confused.
And I was a little bit the other way. It was like I didn't really care about the community. It's like, yeah, whatever. They'll figure it out at some point. That's what I figured. I wanted to know, okay, what was going to happen to him and the child? So is that house real? Are there people in it? Is it just a memory?
I just didn't even want to see the house.
Yeah, well, there's that. But even if he had just walked off into the sunset, I'm going to go, he's walking off into his death. Is there something beyond the... Or am I supposed to envision what the world is beyond the limit?
Yes, envision beyond the limit.
Okay. Everyone's assignment, including you, listeners and viewers.
Create an ending.
No. Read, it's a short story by Ursula, I forget her last, or Urquell or something like that. The Ones Who Walk Away from Omelas. John,
What is the title?
The Ones Who Walk Away from Omelas.
The Ones Who Walk Away from Omelas.
Because it's very similar to this type of idea, and it's literally like 4 pages long. It's such a quick read.
Read it.
And the ending is so beautiful, and it's such a weird ending, but it fits. Mm-hmm. And something like that could have been used for this ending.
So, let me ask you this, because since you're talking about the ending so much, what feeling were you left with at the end? What were you thinking? What were you feeling?
I didn't know what was going to happen with, like, okay, what is he going to do now?
Mm-hmm. What is the word? Precision of language?
Yeah, precision of language.
Yeah, precision of
language. Precision of language, Phil.
So, anger!
You were angry at the end, or were you hoping...
Just confused.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know what I'm left. I don't know what sense of hope I have. I the giver's kind of in prison, but so how, and if you're telling me that he loses memories, how is he going to communicate to these people? What the hell?
And that's the other thing. If they get all the memories, does he go
I feel like he retains the memory of his own life in a way, though. So as much as you've lost these images, you retain the, like...
Essence? Precision of language.
Precision of language, yeah.
Never mind.
What about you, Marissa? What are your thoughts?
I think it's just because now, having just reread the book, there are a lot of moments where Jonas is with his family and they have feel time. Mm-hmm. Where they
did you say feel?
Yeah,
feel time.
Like feeling sessions. They literally
feel.
They sit at dinner and they talk about their feelings. So it's like, this happened to me today. I feel angry. Like, literally, like, therapy
even
session every
the
night.
Thing
you
that
didn't catch
them?
This?
No,
that was in the movie.
It was at the very beginning. Yeah. It was at the very beginning of the film. But they have a lot more of those sessions
throughout
the film.
They talk about the feelings,
the
they just don't feel their feelings.
But even in the book and the film, they're very specific feelings. They don't really... They have these feelings. They don't know how to explain it. And I feel that's kind of like the same at the end. Now he knows what they mean, but how do you explain it?
Okay.
And there's a weird division about the feelings you're allowed to feel and the ones you aren't. So, what was it? Like, and there's one line there. It's like, they understand frustration and disappointment and, like, warmth and nice, but they don't go to the extremes love or passion. Mm-hmm. Or I think one of the words he used is, like, it was either, like, thrilling or terrified. I don't remember.
Yeah.
But it's like, that's almost too big.
They're antiquated.
Emotion.
Okay.
They're antiquated to the point where they're obsolete.
Mm-hmm.
So says the book.
Those particular emotions.
Those particular words.
Emotion that could, like, take over. I don't know. It's like a weird division that they've created.
Anytime you destroy a system, you better have a system in place.
Well, yeah.
I don't know if we had a better system in place to prevent humanity from going down into the dark ages.
But my question is, now that the memories are, you know, return to everybody, that doesn't mean that they can't just control the community again, because that already happened. They know they can you know, get rid of the memories, control it, contain it all in one place, because they've done that like at least twice now. So what's to stop them from doing it again?
Usually the ruin has to happen. Something like that has to happen before you can do that, because once the genie's out of the bottle, it's really hard to get it back in the bottle unless something catastrophic happens. So you need the ruin in order. It's just like everything else, unless you know, we have some sort of cataclysm, and then all of a sudden, oh, security, everything's, you know.
That's
our human nature.
What do you guys think about, again, I thought, in terms of post-production, I thought it was a little bit rushed, but what did you guys think about the music? Or I guess we could talk editing if you want to talk editing, but I want to talk about the music.
Okay, let's talk music.
All right. I actually remembered it more so than like other pieces, only because it was part of it was to a degree maybe a slight crutch of like, okay, if in order for this, and you can notice it a lot of times, if music hits sometimes before a line hits, because the music will cue you, okay, we're about to feel happy, so get ready to feel happy
on this line.
Yeah.
Or, oh my God.
No, I felt like I remembered the music mostly in the montages when he's going through all the memories and he's receiving those, because they were colorful scenes added with the element of music. So that's how I remembered it. And that's how I felt. I felt happy. I felt sadness. I felt all these emotions that a normal person should be feeling. So I think the music really did add to that.
Where his memories and dreams scored? That's what I'm curious about.
It could be.
Oh, and also another fact, in the book, everyone is dreaming, but they don't know how to explain it. And in the film, only when you're off your medication that you can start to have dreams, which is a different element.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I don't really remember the music, to be honest with you, so I'm going to defer to everybody else on that.
By Marco Beltrami. And then I know John wants to talk about the director, but real fast, what did you guys think of Jonas's voiceover throughout? Because I felt in the beginning was fine, and then you know typically, you know, you start to lose Vio as you go in a movie just because of nature, and that happened to a degree, but then there were still, I felt a little bit more heavier than it needed to be.
I really liked it at the beginning, and then. It didn't bother me. I actually really like voiceover. I almost felt like when he was talking that I was waiting for him to describe to me how these memories were making him feel even more. Yeah. Like,
you know what good rule of Vio, this is what I don't know if John agrees with me or that, or if you guys agree with me at all, but if the movie can live without the Vio, keep it. Do you guys understand why?
Yes, I completely understand why.
Because it's counterpoint to what's going on. Because if the movie cannot live without the Vio, you are using it as a crutch, and it's not good.
Yeah, and I was waiting for them to use that as a crutch. Like, every time it came out, I was...
Music.
Yeah, but I was like, I was waiting for them to like tell me more in the Vio. I was like, wait, I'm going to get the information I need. I'm going to get the feelings I need out of this, and then I wouldn't get it. So I like wanted the Vio to come back. This is how it's making sense in my head. It's not making sense what I'm saying it out loud.
No, that makes perfect sense. I completely understand that, because you're wanting more and you're not getting it from the visuals.
Yeah. And so I kept thinking they were going to let me in when he would come over with the voiceover.
I actually liked the voiceover starting out. I was happy to have it. Not that I needed it. I didn't, but it was fun. I tend to like voiceover when it's done well, obviously. At the end, you know, the trick about it is I go, well, he's voiceovering it, so unless we're going to have some weird twist of fate, he's going to survive. Unless the voiceover stops at a certain point in the movie, and then, you know, it's real time after that.
Yeah.
One of the reasons I think that it was unsatisfying at the end is because I had voiceover, because at that point I would have expected him to have some... perspective or understanding of what the future would hold. So the idea that it was left for us to question and be confused by, I thought that he would have a nice little button at the end for something that would be more satisfying.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't mind the voiceover because it did put it in Jonas' perspective for the film, even though the book wasn't a third-person perspective. So I think it added more, the audience could connect more to Jonas rather than just the story in general.
Speaking of tying music and voiceover together, the last voiceover is pretty much I hear music, or maybe an echo, which was
the last words of the book.
Let's talk about the John. Let's talk about the director because you wrote down specifically his body of work.
Well, yeah, he's done so much. I mean, plenty of his movies I really enjoyed. Rabbit Proof Fence. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that's Australian movie. It's a great, great movie. Dead Calm.
I don't know that one.
Womp. Patriot Games, Clinton President. Quiet American. I'm sure Quiet America is nominated.
He did Salt.
Salt, yeah, which I thought he did a good job on that one as well. So he's done a lot of movies, and a lot of them I've really enjoyed. And I thought he did a fine job in this one. I didn't really have any problems with the direction. For me, it all came down to the fact that the story didn't go as deep, and I've said that too many times now.
I wonder how much control he ultimately did have, because typically with more studio-like movies, they give you an arbitrary number, let's say 8 weeks to cut,
right?
You know, get your director's cut in line, and then the studio takes over.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so while he has a history of being a great director, obviously, it's not like a Quentin Tarantino who's like, okay, I have final cut in this picture. I'd be interested to know where
that would be fascinating. I would really like to know that because I'd also like to know how much Jeff had input on that, because if he had final say in this in any way, because it doesn't seem like what we got to see was what they started out to make. Does that make sense? I don't know if that my language is precise.
Well, certainly not the Lloyd Bridges movie.
Yeah, well, that too. But it seems like what the reason why they came to this movie is not what we eventually saw.
Yeah, and the unfair part is too. As we do this, we literally see it when it comes out in theaters because that's when it's most hot, and you as fans want to talk about it then. And obviously, it has a shelf life beyond this. But the DVD extras. So many of the movies that we've covered are now coming out with Blu-ray extras, and it's so interesting to watch all those featurettes, and I wish we could actually be able to talk about those things rather than speculate on these things.
We'll have to do a compendium piece or something like that.
We would be here forever. We'd be doing four a week. that's the interesting part to me, and unfortunately this type of information, no one really wants to divulge upon because, it just gets too much into the negatives, possibly.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway,
will you guys watch this movie again?
Yes, I would.
Okay,
I might see it again, but I think I'd read the book first.
Yeah,
and then see it again because the way you guys are talking about it, I'm kind of I'm still pissed. How do you leave that out?
You're like, this sounds like a really good book.
Is that good? But I mean, things that you're telling me, it's like, how do you choose that to leave that out as a filmmaker or a writer or whomever chose to do that?
I'd be curious to know. I didn't really read anything about this, but the technique, and I imagine they just shot everything in color and then in post chose what to. Yeah. But it'd be, I always love when filmmakers know ahead of time exactly how it's supposed to look, and it's like, okay, we're going to. Grand Budapest Hotel, whatever your thoughts are on it, the fact that he knew, okay, these portions are going to be in aspect ratio 4.5, this is going to be 1.66 to 1, and this is where we go 1.85 to 1. So when you can be that's in.
He's an artist.
I don't think they did that with this movie. I think they literally just chose, okay, let's just shoot in color and do it in post. Mm-hmm. But it would have been interesting to know, if they specifically shot
certain
portions.
Well, they had to know kind of specifically because some of it is pointed out. It's very specifically her hair and apples.
Yeah,
and they had to choose the clothing for everyone. It has to be a certain white, black, or gray shade to really pop on screen for black and white conversion.
Yeah.
But it wasn't truly black and white.
No, it wasn't.
No.
So it did. To me, it felt like it was shot in color, and they just altered it in post. That's what I mean. I don't know, but that's what it seemed like.
But also, going from
like black and white, and then we're starting to see color. But even what looks great on screen turns out to be a light blue for the nurse's scrubs and stuff. Mm-hmm. So like just different certain shades of color.
I did really like the intro tree shots, though.
Oh yeah,
the upper trees that went kind of where you were kind of questioning what color they were. I thought that was done really well. That was one of my favorite shots in the film.
And it tied back to The Giver because he said his first color was green.
No, his first color was yellow.
Was it?
I thought his first color was yellow.
Yeah, I don't know.
I could be wrong. Sorry if I'm misquoting that. I could have sworn his first color was yellow though.
Fair enough. Well, our first color is red, like Jonas.
Perfect.
Anyway, what, anything else you guys want to talk about?
No.
All right. Well, in that case, we're going to wrap this up for you guys today. Thank you, John Comerford.
It's a pleasure being here.
You can follow John on other Anatomy of Movies because he doesn't have social media. we put all the non-social media people together on that corner. Right. Sarah Stretton, which, by the way, if you're wondering why Sarah Stretton doesn't have a Twitter, we do answer it in a fan Q&A session that we do every Wednesday. A lot of anger in that one. Precision.
I feel like you're angry. I feel
well.
Like you think I talked too much today or something.
No, not at all.
That's what I'm feeling.
Not at all. I didn't think that at all. We just happen to differ on opinions.
Oh, okay.
Marissa Serafini does have a Twitter. Where can they find you, Marissa Serafini?
You can actually find my Twitter at SerafiniTV, even though we are talking about films.
Well, Marissa loves TV, Marissa loves movies, true. Marissa loves everything.
Yep, I do. And I love books, obviously.
Obviously, we spent a lot of time on the book, but for a full discussion with the author of the book itself, check out Book Circle Online. That episode will be out, I want to say 2 weeks, so let's say, for safety, September 15th, 2014. So definitely check that out. That's BookCircleOnline.com. Make sure to follow us on anatomyofamovie.com for all your favorite dissections. Movie Anatomy on Twitter. And we've got a lot of great interviews coming up. And also, check out the Schmoes Know. We're part of their brand. They're part of our brand. We're doing a lot where there's a synergy. We're going to be doing
friends.
We're friends. We're going to be doing Expendables 3 where we dissect it. They just interviewed Victor Ortiz from Expendables 3. Great crossover there. So thank you guys for joining us yet again. Let us know your thoughts. Let us know, did you read the book? Did you just watch the movie? What differences did you like? What differences did you not like? Go read The Ones Who Walk Away from Omaha's. I'm throwing tons at you, but that's because I love you. See you next time.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the rest of the Anatomy of a Movie staff, we would like to thank you for listening and subscribing to the show. If you have any questions or comments, feel free to email or tweet us. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been Anatomy of a Movie.